You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Lindsay Wardell, senior software engineer at No Red Ink, explains why JavaScript developers should be using Elm, a functional programming language, and discusses trends in full-stack development.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Web Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Ocell. I'm an architect at This.Labs. Today, we're very excited to sit down and talk with Lindsay Wardell. Lindsay is a senior engineer at No Red Ink and the host of the Human Side of Dev podcast. Lindsay, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. First and foremost, for people that might not be introduced to you, I mean, obviously, I just sort of said that you work at No Red Ink, but do you maybe want to introduce kind of your journey, kind of how you arrived there and, you know, the types of technologies and things that you play with?
Sure. So I got into software development a long time ago, primarily because I was first into making fan games for Sonic the Hedgehog. And then I built a website to talk about fan games. And then I stopped building fan games and just made websites. So that's kind of the origin story. I built a community with like pro boards and got into PHPBB and had some fun there.
The golden age.
It was so much fun. had a lot of fun building my own custom theme so that I could turn PHPBB into a blog and a forum at the same time. No plugins. Let's just do this ourselves. It was great. Eventually got into JavaScript, and that's when I was finally able to do something professionally with it, which was nice. So I got primarily into Vue when I switched to JavaScript, discovered Node. Life was amazing writing one language, front end and back end. Did that for a while, and then discovered Elm, the functional programming language that everyone should use at least one time in their career. And got a job at No Red Ink, which is where I write Elm and Haskell in production, which is fun.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit before we started rolling, but I sort of asked this broad question, and maybe I'm asking it for some of the listeners here who are sitting there learning JavaScript or using JavaScript, and they've heard people talk about Rust or Go or Dart or Elixir or Elm or Ruby or PHP or etc. And they sort of ask themselves, listen, if JavaScript is everywhere, if it's the heart of all of the core frameworks, if it's what the browsers themselves run, and I can run it on the back end and I can, you know, use Electron and run it on any device, why use any other language? Certainly language ergonomics or preferences could enter it, but like, how would you respond to somebody? As you said, you would like, I think everybody should use it at one point in time. What's like your sales pitch for people to reach out and try Elm?
So if I was going to explain Elm just in a high level, the two main things that Elm prevents you from doing is causing runtime exceptions and ensuring that the experience is what you wanted it to be. There's this saying in the Elm community that if it compiles, it works. So the only thing that would cause an Elm app not to work is either your backend or your logic isn't 100% correct, which is really nice. But why Elm in general? My answer would be because it prevents me from making mistakes. So the way the Elm language is built, it's a pure functional programming language. It doesn't allow side effects, so you can't have mutation. You can't have random HTTP requests without handling the error state. You can't have like an if statement without an else. You can't have a switch without covering all of the different variants. It's a language that encourages you to be precise, be accurate, and not miss any of the details. And the compiler, as you're working with Elm, kind of feels like GitHub Copilot a little bit, except it was first, so yay. And it will say, oh, it looks like you meant to do this. Were you trying to use this other thing instead? Or, oh, it looks like you might be referencing the wrong type. I see this other one in the same file. Are you referring to that one? So it's a really helpful compiler that's just trying to make sure that you write the best code that you can. And I think that's the beauty of Elm as a programming language. We can talk about functional programming versus object-oriented. We can talk about other things like the more Haskell-y syntax versus a C-based syntax. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's a language that makes you do better work, which means you can get through the work faster, you can cover all of your edges. And when you test Elm applications, you can have more confidence that your tests are good as well.
What I like about this is that, you know, I've had the experience to be able to do obviously some JavaScript work, including in the backend using Node, and then getting to do some .NET work in the backend using C#. And what was striking to me is just the things that are hard in JavaScript can sometimes be extremely easy or even trivial to do in .NET. And then some of the things that are easy and trivial to do in JavaScript are sometimes incredibly difficult to do in .NET. And so what I took away from that was an appreciation of how the tools that we use, the frameworks that we use, maybe more evidently, in the languages we choose, put you into different mental models or different ways of thinking about problems and breaking down problems, which I found fascinating. So for you, who's experienced both sides quite strongly, like, somebody might have listened to what you just said and say, well, I have to define everything. That sounds very limiting. That sounds very constricting. That sounds like I can't be creative or I can't, you know, move quickly. But how would you describe the effect that using Elm has had on how you approach some of the same problems maybe you were solving in the JavaScript ecosystem or the Vue ecosystem?
So I'm gonna talk at a high level about something that I worked on at work recently, where I was working on one particular page that was meant for a model that was developed originally in 2019, 2018, somewhere around there. And we had to refactor it to handle a completely additional feature, an additional version, but you still use the same backend code. It used a lot of the same front-end code, but it looked completely different. It worked completely different. And we had to handle both of these different cases. In JavaScript, if you were going to do that kind of large refactor, you might struggle because undefined is not found in null or something. One of those kinds of errors is totally possible all the time. Whereas in Elm, I couldn't actually compile the application until it was done. And then I was able to test it and everything worked as expected. So I was able to create the first little change at the furthest edge. And once I made that change, the compiler then told me, oh, you made this, this is what you said here, but over here it's different. So I can just follow the compiler through to all of the errors and clean up the code as I go, make sure that it's understanding what I was intending with the first change, and just kind of explain myself along the way until all of those errors were gone. The code compiled, I was able to open the browser and the interface just worked.
And to some extent, that's the promise of TypeScript, right? I mean, I know I just recently did something like that at work where we had to do a pretty large refactoring and went across many different modules of the application. And it was very powerful using TypeScript to make a change in one place, and it largely would propagate the errors everywhere. And, you know, if I wasn't already sold on TypeScript, which I was, you know, sometimes I think it's easy to chafe at it when you just really want to break the rules and you don't want to have to be told to be very clear about what you're doing. But yeah, I think that has to explain part of the reason why TypeScript sort of consumed the ecosystem as fully and as quickly as it did. It's like there is a lot of power in other tools being able to understand what you were originally trying to do and now what you are doing. And I think, you know, maybe people didn't fully appreciate that when they were, if they've learned JavaScript as their first language and they weren't using something that was a little bit stronger typed or a little bit safer. But certainly, you know, once you get a taste of that, it's very addicting to have that level of comfort behind what you're doing.
It is. I have this talk that I've been playing around with. I haven't found the right place to give it yet, but I've wanted to describe Elm as TypeScript on hard mode. I heard someone say that on...
I like that. Okay.
I heard someone say that on a different JavaScript podcast back in 2019 when I was first learning Elm. And that stuck with me because we do have TypeScript and we do have the type benefits. I've been working on a project in Vue that uses TypeScript as a side project. And it's really nice when I make a type change, suddenly I'm getting the errors. But the danger is that because JavaScript is such a dynamic language and TypeScript is just a superset on top of it that provides you with some additional typing, TypeScript can lie and you can lie to TypeScript. So you can say that a particular type is any or unknown, or you can do a lot of fudging to make it TypeScript think that everything is well and good when in fact it's not. Whereas in something like Elm, you cannot lie to the compiler. The compiler knows all of your mistakes and it will tell you about them, but in a way that is helpful in order to make sure that everything is working. So I think that's the main difference. Like TypeScript is a huge step up from vanilla JavaScript without any types. I'm so glad that things like VS Code are able to do the type inference, even if you're just using a standard JS file. I definitely would never use JavaScript without TypeScript at this point.
Yeah.
But if I'm wanting the full, the assurance that everything is going to work exactly as I'm expecting, I want something that's stronger typed. And in the front end right now, what I would go to is Elm, because it's not JavaScript. It's going to give you a lot more guarantees that you're not going to have any runtime exceptions. You're not going to run into those edge cases that JavaScript just can't handle because it is so dynamic.
Yeah, and it's funny, right? I used to do desktop development using .NET. I did other languages as well, C++ and others before that. But, you know, I was doing primarily out of desktop development with .NET. And if somebody had said in C#, and if they'd come to me and said, well, why C# and not Java? Well, I would have had an answer for them. I did a fair amount of Java work, especially in my master's program. And to me, it was like generics and the erasure that happened there, like with generics. That's just a microcosm of kind of the ergonomics I just didn't like in that language. And I loved some of the ergonomics of the .NET library and of the language integrated query, the link stuff that was added. So, you know, what struck me in thinking about that is that, yeah, that's my preference. Other people have different preferences. It'd be very hard to convince someone one way or another that one language was better than the other. But even with TypeScript, you still notice that it's a superset of JavaScript. It's still built fundamentally on JavaScript, and it cannot exceed or it cannot tuck in all the edges of JavaScript in all the places. And I think for people that really start to push the edges of TypeScript, they encounter that, like trying to understand what enumerations really are and whether they're good or not, and you know whether to use interfaces or types and type unions and all these other pieces. And a lot of that, I think, is stemmed from this idea that TypeScript largely has to pack up and leave once it's time to actually run the app. And so, you know, it can only go do but so much at the end of the day. And so it's not weird to me that people are maybe out there seeking something that has a lot of the power, the potency, and maybe even the ergonomics of like a TypeScript-enabled application, but maybe has done that since the beginning. So it's incorporated throughout the entire language and the entire ecosystem rather than being built on top of something. That doesn't seem like an odd thing to drive a lot of devs to be experimenting with different languages and different tools as they come out.
Yeah, and I think that we can see that in the trend where more backend languages are trying to make some way to write their language that influences the front end so you don't have to write JavaScript. We've seen that with Elixir and Phoenix Live Views for a long time. And there's equivalents in Laravel. There's equivalents in Ruby at this point. There's things like HTMX, which just let you write things on the back end, pass up some HTML, and continue on with your day, which is really powerful because then you can stay in whatever that strongly typed language you prefer, or loosely typed if that's what you like. But you can choose your level of strength on the back end and which language you prefer, which ergonomics you prefer. So if you like using Link, you can just keep using Link in C# and then pass whatever it is to the front end. You could do something like Blazor, you could do something like HTMX. There's different ways to get that kind of strength in your type system and understand that the code is exactly what you expect it to be in the front end.
Yeah, yeah. It's been interesting though, because it's like the propagation of things like Next and Nuxt has changed maybe some of my thoughts on what the future of JavaScript was. So just to sort of say what I mean here, JavaScript started, I guess, humbly, let's say, and then it expanded to fill the universe. And there was a period around the 2015 to 2018, 2019 timeframe where there was this mantra that, you know, always bet on JavaScript. JavaScript was going to take over absolutely everything. And then I think some people sort of thought that JavaScript was too slow and it was never going to be fast enough to truly power everything. And so there was this kind of idea that we'll push it, maybe we'll push it out of the back end. Like you were saying, right? Like ways to abstract it away and have it be only the thing that ran in the front end. And then there was conversations where people were talking about, hey, eventually your favorite libraries like React and Vue and Angular, those are going to get built in some extremely performant language. And they're going to be these engines that run inside of your browser that just dock some JavaScript to run your UI and then they end. But you know, with the propagation of these full stack frameworks, it kind of forced JavaScript back down the menu everywhere. And I'm really curious to see what the future is of these different languages in these ecosystems where things like Next and Nuxt are so popular, and whether these languages will each then have to have their own version of a meta framework or whatever you want to call it, for the ones that don't already have one, to, you know, address this. I could just hear the Ruby developers going, "We already have it. We've had it since day one." you know, what are your thoughts on this? Like, on you know, kind of what you were talking about, the future of JavaScript as, you know, as we will use it to build, you know, web experiences, especially in light of now the popularity of these meta frameworks.
So I think I'm going to take a step back from your question first. And I think my perspective on full stack application development is that we're going to move more into a space where you don't have to know as many languages. Because right now, if you are building something with Next or Nuxt, I use Nuxt, you need to know HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, or TypeScript. But, you know, three languages is basically what you need to know. Then, depending on your ORM, you may need to have a better or a stronger or weaker understanding of SQL. But that's basically it. Three to four languages that you need to know. If you're incorporating an entirely distinct backend language, Ruby, Elixir, C#, Java, whatever, it doesn't really matter. You need to learn that language, and then you need to learn that language's paradigms. And you still need to know JavaScript. So you're working in two distinct programming languages just to make one application. And I think this has been a continual problem since modern web development really began. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're in the part of history where we're going to be solving that problem. And JavaScript solves it pretty easily with Next and Nuxt and tools like that. But we're seeing other languages do the same thing. Gleam just recently hit 1.0, and there's a framework out there. I think it's called Lustre or Luster. And it allows you to write Gleam that compiles both to the Erlang VM as well as to JavaScript. So you can write a full application just in Gleam, which is fantastic. And I think we're going to keep moving in that direction. But going back to your question, I don't actually think that JavaScript development is going anywhere. I think that tools like Next and Nuxt or SvelteKit or Remix or Redwood or what have you, there's a number of these kinds of full stack tools. I don't think they're going to be going anywhere. And I think we are going to instead end up at a point where they stand side by side with things like Ruby on Rails and Laravel, where you have your all-in-one solution in this language in order to do the thing that you want to do. And it'll become more of a comparison like you see on mobile between React Native or Flutter or what have you, where you get to write for multiple targets. And you're going to be able to compare languages and their framework rather than languages and then their framework over there.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to say thank you to This.Labs, who is the sponsor of today's show. If you need help with a project that has failed to deliver on time or are in need of a team that feels true ownership over your engineering projects, definitely hit up This.Labs. They specialize in helping business leaders ensure their strategic digital initiatives stay on track. Trusted by companies like PlayStation, Capital One, Herman Miller, PayPal, and T-Mobile, you can find them at this.co. That's THISDOT.co. Now, let's return to our show. Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, it's funny too, because the JavaScript ecosystem for so long, you know, if anybody's joined in the last almost now 10 years, you've only experienced JavaScript really in a period of unconstrained growth. And if you joined in the last 10 years and you happen to be a React developer right away, you only also saw a framework that was growing unconstrained and eating the lion's share of the you know, sort of market share of usage in that ecosystem. And I think in the last few years, we've sort of seen what it used to be called sort of JavaScript fatigue or things like that of a lot of new tools. I don't think that's the paradigm to look through it anymore. What I like to see it as is it seems like the meta has broken. React is fine, but it's no longer the obvious choice. JavaScript is fine, but it's no longer the only obvious choice. And I think as developers, and especially if you haven't been here for very long, there hasn't been a period in almost a decade where the meta wasn't obvious. I use JavaScript for everything. I maybe use React for everything. Okay, we have to give some allowances. That's sort of a generally true statement there. But, you know, and I think a lot of people, the confusion they have and the uncertainty they feel is because we haven't really been taught how to handle an environment where there isn't an obvious meta, where people have to make decisions such as like, what do I prefer? What does my team need? Or, you know, what might fit the type of problem I want to deal with? And they've sort of been looking for what is the right answer. And more than maybe it's been in a long time, I don't think there is a right answer. I mean, there never really was, but I think it's even less so now. And I think that makes a lot of people, honestly, myself included, constantly a little uncomfortable because they're worried that they're on a, am I on a sinking ship? Am I still on the winning ship? Should I leave? But then maybe this one succeeds, you know? It's one of these types of situations. So if you're giving people advice, like what are your thoughts on this environment that we find ourselves in where maybe the future is more wide open than it's ever been? Do people need to diversify or is it okay to just say, hey, I like this particular tech stack and I'm just going to go in on this one?
I'm being influenced by my own career, but I think diversify personally. Every single job that I've worked at, I've used a completely different stack. I've used completely different front-end tools, completely different back-end tools. I think I've told this story before, but I got a job where I was being pitched a Vue and Node position. And then I got there and 2 weeks in, it was very obvious they actually wanted a Java developer, not a JavaScript developer. But I was able to learn Java on the spot. I was there for 2 years. It was a great job. But I've been able to use that. And so at the next job, I dove more into PHP and I went more into React and Next.js. And then at the next job, you know, completely different stack. And now I'm using Ruby and Haskell and Elm and having a great time. But I feel like while I haven't dove into React, for example, if I were looking for a new job and I saw a React listing, I wouldn't hesitate to take that because I can say I have already worked in all of this and I have learned it on the spot and been successful. So I think being a polyglot in programming languages and frameworks and diversifying out of a singular stack, I think is going to be extremely beneficial right now. Because I don't think, like you're saying, there isn't an obvious choice. Different teams are going to choose different things. I think the likelihood of going from one job to the next where you get to work on the exact same stack is going to go down.
And, you know, I completely agree with all of that. I'll maybe add a different shade of the same answer for anybody else that is maybe more in my style, which is that I love to learn something and then eventually master it. I like to not just want to learn something and then go learn the API service of another thing. I want to learn one thing and then I want to know how it works under the hood and eventually learn, you know, how it, if it's a compiled language, like how it compiles. I mean, I remember by the end of my time with .NET, I could tell you how certain commands were going to turn into the IL, into the intermediate language piece.
Oh, that's cool.
And to be able to diagnose certain timing bugs, like, oh, because it goes like this, it's going to sequence sort of weirdly. And I loved getting to that level of mastery. And the same token that what you're saying is, I use it for the same reasoning. While I can't use that level of knowledge to, say, understand how a Java program works or understand how a JavaScript application works, I can certainly use the idea that software is more nuanced than it looks, or that software isn't magical, that if you run the same commands with the same conditions, you're going to get the same results, to help learn something new. So sometimes I actually go with the stick with my tried and true and gain mastery with it on the idea that when I'm ready to learn something else, I'm going to be able to. I may not already know it yet, but I know I'll be able to get there. But I think that agrees largely with what you're saying, which is that you should be prepared for the idea that your next job isn't going to use the tech stack, the framework that you've been using. If it was using React at one job, it might not be. It might be using Quick at your next job, or it might be using Elm or Ruby at your next job. And I think not being intimidated by that, I think is going to be a big part of the next 10 years because I don't see a strong meta establishing again. I think there will be very big pockets for different technologies, but I think that it may not be as strongly driven by JavaScript and one library as it maybe has been for the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years.
I agree with that. I also don't want to rule out the possibility that some obvious choice is going to come forward again. I do not think that React is going to stay where it is. I think it could be something else, but I think it is very tempting, especially to newer engineers, to just say, what should I use, and look for the obvious answer. And then those newer engineers will become experienced engineers, and they will tell the newer engineers, this is the obvious answer. And I know I definitely am somebody who has done that. When asked during 2019 to 2021, I knew somebody who was getting ready to go to college, wanted to do software. And I was just like, just learn JavaScript. You'll be fine. You'll always have a job. You'll always be good to go. That's not necessarily always going to be true, but I suspect at some point, some dominant player is going to come in, and they're going to be the next milestone in the history of front-end development. We can already look back and we can say, you know, even looking outside of JavaScript, but like we have PHP just as a language. And then we had Ruby on Rails, and then we have React. There's going to be something else after React. These are just the milestones.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it would be foolish to bet against something getting very large. We've always had cycles. But we'll see. Yeah, and I think it's hard to know what it'll be. Maybe it'll be prompt script, and it'll be whatever feeds Devin, the AI.
I'm going to take a wild guess, and this is my hot take. And I don't have an answer for what this would look like. So if anyone messages me, I don't actually know. But I suspect that the next thing will not be component based, because that is what React does. React does it well. Vue does it well. Svelte does it well. Angular does it well. Everybody does it well. But React is the one, when you think of that started it, and they're still the most dominant. I don't think something can become more standard than React without taking a different take on application development. And I have no idea what that could look like to actually be ergonomic and good for developers, but that's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that component-based would have been where I saw it, but again, that's one of those things where you don't know what you don't know. I think that part of the reason we've seen where these other frameworks have found where to put the little shoehorn to get some separation between the different offerings was largely, it looked like, in reactivity, which is kind of funny. Something that you took for granted in the Angular JS days, and I think for some reason that was maybe explained some of Vue's difficulty in sort of differentiating itself, is that for as long as Angular JS existed, Vue was just a much cleaner way to write that style. But now a lot of people kind of grew up in that model of what it meant with re-rendering with React, that now these signals and these different granularity of reactivity seems to be where people are innovating, more so than necessarily in the component-based thing. But like you're saying, maybe that's just the first taste, and the big paradigm shift is coming on top of that. And that's, you know, what we'll get to. So yeah. I mean, I'm excited. We'll have you back in a couple of years, if not sooner. And, we'll check that. We'll check out that presumption.
See what we can predict in the future, and if we got it right.
Well, you know, you mentioned that you've been using Nuxt lately. I know that I had an opportunity to see Nuxt in action, and particularly the Nuxt developer toolkits, the sort of environment, the tools that you have with that system. And was utterly blown away. Vue's always been, in my opinion, completely underrated for its tooling. Long ago, I think it might still exist, but long ago, I was so impressed with the Vue UI, which I thought was going to be the future of how all these frameworks would build their CLIs, because it was just so smooth to use and it's so full-featured. I was, at the time, I was saying the future is not CLIs. and that didn't fully come to fruition. But then I saw this, the Next developer toolkits, and I was just like, Nuxt developer toolkits, absolutely flabbergasted. So not only is the meta framework itself good, but the tooling is second to nothing that I've ever seen. So what has been your experience? What have you enjoyed about it in the time that you've been using it?
So I will admit, I absolutely love Nuxt, and I'm just planning on using it all the time. But my experience has been very good. I have been working on a side project. It's called Clock Tracker. Clock Tracker is a tool for gamers of the game Blood on the Clock Tower to kind of find their community, connect, share, record their game experiences in a way that they can then look back on the past and kind of do some data analytics on, like, how many times have I been the demon? How many times have I been something else? What's my win-loss ratio? Stuff like that. As well as just like event organization and community building. So that's the project I've been building on. And I've been really happy working with Nuxt. In part, just because I get to use Vue. Vue is my preferred JavaScript framework. I've played with React, I've played with Vue, I've played with Svelte, and Vue is just the one that I go back to whenever I get the opportunity. And getting to work with Nuxt, where I have the full backend experience just built into the framework, I don't have to think about it. I don't need to try and build out an express router or incorporate some other external server. It's just right there. And I can just bring in tooling that I need. Just makes the experience so nice to work with. As I've been building out this project. So, and I'm really excited. This isn't for my project itself, but I'm really excited with what the Nuxt team has been doing recently with Nuxt Hub. Have you gotten a chance to look at that?
No, I haven't. Sounds amazing.
Oh, so Nuxt Hub is Nuxt's take on the full stack framework. So they are providing tools to interact with Cloudflare, database stuff. I don't have all the details because I haven't used it myself yet, but they're building a full stack experience for Nuxt where you don't have to rely on external things. You can just go to Nuxt Hub, sign up for an account, connect it to Cloudflare, and move on with life. So I think that's really exciting because whenever in JavaScript we're talking about the full stack the full stack framework and the meta framework, somebody is always going to say, well, Ruby on Rails has an ORM and this or that. And Nuxt Hub it feels like it's going in that direction. It feels like that is the intent. It's starting out small. It's just providing a few things. There's a key value store. There's a database. Looks like you can do blob file storage. And they use Drizzle as their default for ORM. But that's already pretty good. And then you just need to bring in some authentication layers. And you can build your entire application just in Nuxt from like a first party perspective, not the standard JavaScript story that we've had for a while of you have to bring in all of these libraries and then you can finally build a hello world.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like with the Nuxt Hub piece as well, and one of the things that we've noticed on our teams is that when you need to add in a DevOps or a deploy ops piece deployment, that increases the complexity of the team that you have and the work that you're doing, not just like a couple percent or a 2x multiplier. It's like an order of magnitude multiplication. Because as you were saying earlier, right, we already have to know a bunch of languages just to do front-end development. If you add how to know AWS and database administration and this and this and this, if you're a sufficiently large enterprise team, you're saying, yeah, we've got people that do that. But if you work in a smaller shop or a team of like two or three, four engineers, it is a tremendously more complicated to manage an AWS deployment over anything else. And I think that's been a lot of the draw of something like a Vercel or, you know, tools like Nuxt and their integrations in Nuxt Hub, is that we do need more ways to abstract away to a reasonable degree that deployment complexity. Reasonable mid developers and even some junior developers need to be able to get something shipped easily, right? And that was what was great about Netlify is, you know, you could just drop a folder with a SPA, you know, stuff in it and just drop it in, or just drop a folder of HTML and it's on the web. We need that for more complicated, more production, more enterprise-ready applications. And I think that's been the promise of stuff like NuxHub or Vercel with Next is just enabling way more developers to be able to actually deploy full solutions without needing to also learn AWS or Azure or, you know, whatever tools that they need to pull in. And that just means we get cooler software built by more agile, smaller teams and cheaper software in general.
Yeah, it's been really interesting because the project I've been working on, Clock Tracker, that's the first time in a while that I have been able to spin up a project from start to finish and actually have users. So I currently have almost 400 users on Clock Tracker as of today, as of recording.
Wow.
And it's been really, really fun to have to figure out those different problems. But also there's serious problems of how do I make a deployment without breaking everybody else's experience for like 5 to 10 minutes? How do I make sure that I'm running all of this in a way that is efficient and maintains the user experience? How do I solve the deployment problems that I'm having? Because I'm the only developer working on this. And I want to make sure that I'm not overburdening myself or doing things in the wrong way. So it's been really fun to apply those things that I've been picking up as I'm working on different jobs at different places and applying that from scratch. And that it also really highlights that it'd be great to have even simpler tools than we have today. And compared to what we used to have, it's fantastic. I'm using currently render.com for hosting. I'm wanting to move over to fly.io. But either one is pretty straightforward for getting something onto the web and then out to users. And using GitHub Actions for the deploy process and running my CI. But it'd be great the closer we can get to making that simplified, the better it's going to be, and the more products that we can have that get out the door instead of just living on people's computers.
Absolutely. Lastly, I'm curious about how you've been dealing with the paradigm shift. You know, the move from SPA to these meta frameworks is one that I understood was going to be large, but I didn't fully appreciate it until I sat down with some teams that were making that transition for the first time. And the types of conversations that people get into, again, the same ideas that like, well, if we were building a SPA, this is what we would do. But now that we have, you know, these meta framework enabled pages, and these ones are statically rendered, and these other ones aren't statically rendered, but they have to share data, but do they? What's happening on the server? What's happening on the client? How has your experience been getting acclimated to this on your application coming from that world? Has it been smooth for you? Has it been surprising to you? Just kind of curious how your path has been.
In general, it's been smooth. One of the nice things about Nuxt is you can rely on Vue3 composables to bring in the data that you need. And you can do that kind of decision-making about a Nuxt application. This is going to be rendered on the server. This is going to be on the client. This is client only. And you don't have the hydration step in between necessarily. So it's been relatively smooth finding those edges and figuring out this is the part that needs to be client only. This is the part that can live more on the server. This is the part that's static. And Nuxt provides good tooling for making that distinction in different parts of your front-end application. That said, it also provides you with the Nuxt link component so that you can easily get the SPA experience as you're linking between different pages. And that's really nice. It's something that I appreciate as a user as well as the developer, is that quick and easy load once you're in the front end, especially for an application-based thing. Something like Astro, where you have the multi-page experience for the most part, you're still going to have a little bit of that distinction when you're going between pages. You're going to have to load things because you are primarily server rendered and then hydrating as necessary. So I really appreciate the balance that Nuxt strikes on that.
I'm not saying that a tool that already exists hasn't solved this, but I think my hot take is that the tool that really takes off next, maybe it's not no pun intended, but the one that owns this next era is going to be the one that can help developers make the mental leap to understanding where is what happening and in a really intuitive and straightforward way. Again, not saying that that tool isn't already out there doing its job, but I think once people get their head around that and they get that, I think that's going to be the next big piece. Because I have seen a lot of friction from people, because, you know, even if you're using like a remix or something like that, where there's a bit of magic that goes on there. It's an amazing magic. I've enjoyed using the tool quite a lot when I've gotten a chance to use it, but there's a bit of magic there and a bit of hand waving, a bit of like, you don't need to worry about this, a piece that kind of happens with that, that, as I was describing the level of mastery that I like to get to, eventually I want to scratch under the surface. But I think a lot of times it's very difficult to create new mental models for what's happening, where they were a little bit easier to create when it was spas and what's a render? What triggers a render? That was somewhat easy to explain, but now it's like these island architectures and other things that are going on. And I'm just like, it is really hard to intuitively explain to people what's happening. And maybe we just all need to get there together. But if a tool can smooth that transition, that probably will be the one that everybody uses.
I think so. I think another piece on that same view of the server versus the client is how data gets fetched to hydrate the client. So I actually really like the idea that Next put out there of how to use server and make SQL requests from your component, from your page file. I think whatever framework can do that the best is going to have a good shot in what you're talking about. Nuxt does pretty well on this, where you have a global use fetch composable. And if you're on the server, it will just ping that file and get the data. And if you're on the client at that point, then it will make an API request over the network and get that data. And for the developer, you don't have to think about it. You're just using fetch. I think continuing down that line, finding some way to make the SQL requests use Prisma in the component itself somehow would be an even smoother experience. I don't know what that, again, I don't know what that looks like, but I think that would be something worth investing in, just to continue smoothing the experience of having a full stack application.
All right. Well, we would love to keep talking about this and debating this forever, but that's going to be it for us today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this Modern Web Podcast, and thank you to our guest, Lindsay. As always, the conversation does not stop here. You can find Lindsay on Twitter at Lindsay K. Wardell. That is LINDSAYKWARDELL. You can find me online at RoboCell. As for the podcast, you can find us online at moderndotweb.com or on Twitter at modern.web. And as we close out here, we'd like to thank today's sponsor, This.Labs, who would like me to remind you that sometimes it's hard to bridge the gap between business objectives and tech implementation, and it can get messy. This Dot is trusted by top names like Meta, Google, and T-Mobile, and they love helping business leaders fulfill their strategic digital initiatives. Check them out at this.co. One more time, that's THISDOT.co. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Bye.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs. For all of your friends and you, yeah, query, shout it, yeah, queries too. So come on, let's go. 'Cause we got a show for you.